Up is the news.
The headlines: Tehran criticizes Germany for inciting terrorism and hate speech in Iran while considering the fight against the same phenomena as a priority for its territory. Russian President Vladimir Putin says the West is exploiting Ukraine and using its people as cannon fodder in conflict against Russia. And also, Palestinians attend the funeral procession of a teenager who was killed during clashes with Israeli forces in the occupied West Bank on Thursday. Hello and welcome, everybody. Our top story for this half hour: Iran says fighting terrorism, violence, and hate speech are clear international responsibilities amid the Western criticism of its response to the riots in the country. The Iranian foreign minister singled out Germany's, quote, hypocritical and duplicitous stance on the unrest in Iran. Hossein Amir Abdullahian said Berlin considers such scourges as red lines for itself, but incites the same sinister phenomena in Iran and denounces Tehran's legitimate campaign against them. Germany has condemned Iran and summoned the Iranian ambassador. The UK and Canada have also slapped fresh sanctions on Iran, while the EU is also reportedly set to impose more bans on the country. Illegal weapons entering Iran have surged during the past few months. Foreign sponsors of the recent riots have been planning to arm rioters to destabilize the country while stoking insecurity, but Iranian security forces have successfully foiled several of these arms smuggling operations, sending a strong message to the enemies of Iran that peace and stability is the country's red line.
Ever since the riots began in September, anti-Iran media has been depicting the situation as a violent crackdown on so-called peaceful protesters. For the past 2 months, they have been running a propaganda campaign to further pressure Iran under the pretext of violating human rights. Iran's intelligence ministry has recently reported the confiscation of a huge cache of weapons and equipment used by terrorists. In fact, Iranian security forces have thwarted several arms smuggling operations and dismantled a number of operational cells affiliated with the terrorist organizations such as MKO. This comes as the illegal influx of weapons into the country is on the rise recently. The confiscated weapons were supposed to be transferred to Iran to be used in the recent riots. Last month, in an interview with the Persian service of the British state-funded broadcaster BBC, former White House National Security Advisor John Bolton said the, quote, Iranian opposition is now being armed with weapons. Bolton added that these arms are being smuggled into the country from the Iraq's Kurdistan region, praising the use of force against Iran's security forces. The recent foreign-backed riots in Iran have claimed hundreds of lives belonging to both security forces and ordinary people. In addition, by conducting acts of vandalism, violence, and insecurity, rioters have paved the way for separatist and terrorist groups to infiltrate the country and carry out brutal attacks against innocent people.
Smuggling huge amounts of weapons into Iran to be used in the recent foreign-backed unrest is merely aimed at undermining the country's security. But Iranian officials have time and again stated that Iran's security is a red line that no one is allowed to cross. Mahdi Abbasian, Tehran.
The United States has imposed sanctions on a prominent Turkish businessman for allegedly violating Washington's restrictive measures on Iran's oil sales. The Treasury Department has blacklisted Sitki Ayan, an associate of Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan. A number of companies run by Ayan and his family are also on the blacklist. According to the Treasury, Ayan has facilitated the sale and shipment of Iranian oil for the country's Revolution Guards Corps. The U.S. also says Ayan has used his business network to obscure the origins of the Iranian oil and the destination of the payments. Iran's oil and petrochemical industries are under U.S. sanctions. Earlier, we were joined by economic and political analyst Paolo Raffone. He talked about how the sanctions on the Turkish businessmen affect the dynamics of U.S.-Turkey relations and what the move intended to achieve.
They do not want Turkey to act too independently, especially looking at the forthcoming presidential elections in Turkey next year. So this is a way to send a sort of a red card to Erdogan, saying, well, we know what to do, and we show you that if we want, we can punish you. And then, of course, on the passage, they also try to curb the Iranian activities in selling oil to different parties. So it's part of the game that the United States are doing to recover a weight in the equation, both in the Middle East and in relation to Russia and China.
The Russian President Vladimir Putin criticizes Western states' policies, warning that they're increasing the risk of a global conflict.
The potential for conflict in the world is growing, and this is a direct consequence of the attempts by Western elites to preserve their political, financial, military, and ideological dominance by any means. They deliberately multiply chaos and aggravate the international situation.
Putin also accused the West of exploiting Ukraine and using its people as, quote, cannon fodder against Russia. He made the remarks during a video message to a summit of defense ministers from the Shanghai Cooperation Organization and a group of ex-Soviet countries. Russia has repeatedly denounced the West's military support for Ukraine since the war began there in February. Moscow says Western countries are only adding fuel to the flames of war. It says they do not seek to find a solution to end the conflict. Well, the Russian president has also threatened to cut oil production in response to the Western price cap on the country's crude exports. Vladimir Putin made the threat at a news conference following a regional summit in Kyrgyzstan. The Russian leader slammed the price cap as a, quote, stupid decision, warning that the move is harmful to global energy markets. The $60 price limit on Russia's seaborne oil agreed by Ukraine's Western allies came into force on Monday. The restrictions are aimed at hitting Russia's revenues to reduce its ability to finance the war in Ukraine. However, Moscow says a cap will not hurt its economy. Kiev has also reacted by calling the move ineffective and a weak position by its allies. Greg Simons is a researcher at the Sweden-based Institute for Russian and Eurasian Studies. He says a EU's price cap decision will come back to haunt the bloc itself.
The reality is they know it's going to bite them. I mean, they've been talking about how the US is deindustrializing Europe, which it is through these acts of stupidity, which these European bureaucrats are willingly doing for Washington. So, I mean, this is just a dog biting its own tail. And, I mean, it's going to go nowhere good. And, I mean, this has been proven. They know that their industry is going to go down. They know there's going to be a shortage of fuel. They know that the prices are going to go up. And that the rest of the world, beyond this little Eurocentric vision and the different vassal states which belong to this US configuration of this Western-centric world, do not agree with them.
The European Union is to add more than $2 billion to fund used to help arm Ukraine, but this could face delays amid differences with Hungary. EU diplomats say a preliminary agreement has been struck among the 27 member bloc to bolster the European peace facility. The fund has already committed over 3 billion euros to cover the cost of weaponry for Kiev. The deal was set to be signed on Monday, but a standoff with Hungary over its own frozen EU funds may force Budapest's delay approval. The EU has frozen Hungarian funds over the country's opposition to the bloc's sanctions on Russia and its refusal to support the war in Ukraine. Hungary argues that the EU is playing a dangerous game by providing Ukraine with destructive weapons, training Ukrainian soldiers, and imposing sanctions on Russian energy. Palestinians hold a funeral procession for a teenager killed by Israeli forces in the occupied West Bank. 16-year-old Deya Erhimi was killed in a village northwest of Ramallah on Thursday. Three Palestinians were also killed and several others injured on the same day during an Israeli raid on the Jenin refugee camp. Friday was declared a day of public mourning in Jenin. Israeli forces have been escalating deadly attacks against Palestinians, killing some 150 this year alone across the West Bank. The resistance movement Hamas has reacted defiantly to the surge in Israeli violence. It says the regime will only make Palestinians more resolute in their resistance. Mona Candil is joining us now from Ramallah. Mona, welcome to the program. Tell us about today's processions.
We have to mention that 24 hours, Palestinians were killed by the Israeli forces in different incidents. There was in Silwad village, a Palestinian was shot dead. In Jenin, three Palestinians were killed in cold blood, including one of them was a member of the jihad movement. Others were unarmed Palestinians, and they were shot dead during an operation to Jenin camp. Here, on Thursday, as you have mentioned, 16-year-old Diya Rahimi Al-Tami Al-Rimawi from the village of Beit Rima, 16-year-old, was shot dead by Israeli forces while he was with a group of his friends. Teenage Palestinians were in an area where Israeli forces have raided the Abud village. And of course, when they saw Palestinians there, they opened fire, killing Zoya and wounding another Palestinian. Today in the village of Beit Rima, thousands of Palestinians took part in the funeral processions of Zoya al-Rimawi. The mourners vowed to avenge the killing of this Palestinian teenager. As you have said, Israeli crimes and atrocities continue to take place in the occupied territories on a daily basis. The number of Palestinians who have been killed by the Israeli forces since the beginning of 2022 have raised to 217 Palestinians, including the 52 who were shot dead by or were killed by the Israeli military in the Gaza Strip. But Palestinian resistance groups have stressed that their option to resist or the option to resist is the only option left to them to respond to the ongoing Israeli crimes and aggression. It's not only raiding Palestinian areas, arresting Palestinian people, destroying Palestinian homes, and killing people in cold blood, knowing at the end of the day that none of the Israeli soldiers, even if they kill and assassinate Palestinians, would be dragged and tried in the Israeli courts.
Mona, before we leave you, let's also talk about the Palestinian resistance response to the recent Israeli aggression against Palestinians. A number of Palestinians have been killed over the past few days by more Israeli aggression. And for one instance, Hamas has said that the surge in Israeli violence will, in fact, make Palestinians more resolute in their resistance. Tell us more about that.
Well, yes, Hamas movement and the other Palestinian resistance groups have made it clear that the more Israeli military would be killing Palestinians in cold blood and even targeting Palestinian fighters, this would make Palestinians more resolved to continue the resistance, to fight the Israeli forces, and to stand against the illegal Israeli policies. Palestinians have been left alone. There are only condemnations from the international community, the European Union, but at the same time, Palestinians are being killed in cold blood without anything left of them. The Israelis don't want for the Palestinians to resist. They want to raid Palestinian areas and kill people, destroy their homes, arrest people from all walks of life, and at the same time, they don't want them to resist or to react to these crimes. So Palestinian resistance groups, and even people are being killed without being affiliated to any of the resistance groups. People here are left had nothing to do but to continue resisting the Israeli atrocities and the Israeli crimes.
All right, thanks a lot. Mona Candil joining us from Ramallah. Elsewhere, Lebanese security forces say there has been a significant increase in the number of Lebanese recruited by the Israeli spy agency Mossad. They said the Arab country's deepening economic crisis is the main reason behind the rise. Mariam Salah has more in this report.
Lebanon has arrested 185 people suspected of working for the Israeli spy agency since October 2019, when the Arab country's ongoing economic crisis became apparent.
This is Israel's intelligence agency's invasion of the Lebanese virtual sovereignty. The Israelis took advantage of the economic crisis and the fact that the Lebanese are looking for job opportunities with US dollars coming from abroad. And so they created fake companies through which they acquired thousands of resumes from Lebanese people. They were able to contact any one of those job hunters in the guise of foreign companies, while in reality they were Israeli recruiters.
Lebanese security sources have told AFP that the number has increased dramatically, from only 4 or 5 arrests per year.
One of the most notable examples of this was the busting of over 35 Lebanese and Palestinians that were gathering intelligence on Hezbollah and of the Palestinian factions in Lebanon for Israel. Israel, again, used a lot of fake companies and front groups to trap those kind of in a desperate economic situation into accepting these fake front opportunities.
Out of the 185 people arrested since 2019, 165 have been prosecuted and 25 convicted and sentenced. The economic collapse in Lebanon has taken its toll on the country in several ways, but it seems it's not the only reason for treason. Several collaborators admitted that they continued their communications with the Mossad out of sheer opposition to the resistance.
When we read the interrogation reports of those who were arrested, we understand that it was more than only giving intelligence. One of the suspects admits that he was asked to write articles aimed at sowing sedition amongst the Lebanese and inciting people against Hezbollah and resistance. They asked him, for example, to write articles which would give an impression that Hezbollah is linked to the Beirut port explosion in order to provoke hatred against the resistance movement.
Political analysts believe recruiting spies by the Israeli regime will continue since a military option is not on the table.
These kinds of more subtle forms of gaining influence in Lebanon, and especially putting people into a very desperate economic state and taking advantage of that, seems to both basically cut the losses on the military front that Israel and the U.S. Even know that it has unmatched against the resistance forces in the region.
Although Lebanon remains technically in a state of war with Israel, there has been no direct confrontation between the two sides since 2006. Nevertheless, Israel's espionage activities have never stopped. Maryam Saleh, Beirut.
British postal workers begin the first of several strikes in December. They join other walkouts over pay, signaling major holiday disruptions. Thousands of Royal Mail postal workers are walking off the job, demanding higher salaries to keep up with Britain's soaring inflation. The union representing the workers says that Royal Mail increased salaries by 2%, but that was not enough to cope with a rising cost of living. The strike is part of a spiraling number of industrial actions across numerous sectors, including rail workers, ambulance drivers, and airport staff. The government is now preparing to enlist the army to cover ambulances and border security ahead of a wave of strikes this month. Prime Minister Rishi Sunak has called the union leaders unreasonable and warned of new laws that would curb the right to strikes. And that brings us to an end here on this edition of World News. Do stay tuned, though. Bye.
Follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest global developments. You can keep in touch with us by following us on Twitter at twitter.com/ParsTodayEN. You can also follow IRIB English Radio on Instagram via instagram.com/ParsTodayEnglish.
path towards enlightenment.
In the name of God, the All-Compassionate, the All-Merciful. Salam and welcome to another weekly episode of our series titled Path Towards Enlightenment, which is an endeavor to make you and us familiar with an easy and fluent explanation of God's final scripture to all mankind, the Noble Quran, that was revealed to the last and greatest of all messengers, Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny. Last week, we completed explanation of Surah Mumtahine, and from this Friday onwards, we embark on explanation of the next Surah, that is Surah Saf, which is number 61 in the serial order of compilation of the Noble Quran. It has 14 ayahs and was revealed in Medina. It declares God's love of all those believers who maintain the solid ranks or unity in selflessly and fearlessly defending Islam against aggression. Its name is derived from Ayah 4, in which the word Saf or ranks occurs. The surah encourages the believers to stick together in support of God's cause and criticizes those who broke the word and those who argued against the faith. Moses and Jesus are cited as examples of prophets whose communities became fragmented. The rebellious were left to stray and the faithful granted success. The rewards of those who strive in God's cause are described in some detail in Ayah 11. It is narrated from the Prophet's fifth infallible heir, Imam Muhammad Baqir, peace upon him, that whoever recites Surah Saf in his obligatory and supererogatory prayers, God Almighty will place him in the ranks of the angels and prophets. However, such ranks will be for those who act upon Quranic injunctions. We now invite you to listen to ayahs 1, 2, and 3 of the surah.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Sabbaha lillahi ma fis samawati wa ma fil ard. Wa huwa al-azizul hakim. يا أيها الذين آمنوا لم تقولون ما لا تفعلون كبر مقتا عند الله أن تقولوا ما لا تفعلون.
Whatever there is in the heavens and the earth glorifies Allah, and He is the Almighty, the All-Wise. All you who have faith, why do you say what you do not? It is greatly outrageous to Allah that you should say what you do not. This surah, like a few other ones, begins with glorification of Allah and stresses the fact that the entire creation enjoys perception and glorifies the Almighty Creator, who is omnipotent and all-wise. Although these ayahs were revealed concerning armed jihad and desertion from the Battle of Uhud by Muslims of weak faith, the divine words never restrict the broad contextual message of the Noble Quran, which is for all times. Consequently, any vain word deserves censure and rebuke, be it in terms of steadfastness in battlefield or any other positive and constructive act. The proof faith is action. Some people utter empty words in friendly get-togethers, but they fail to act upon their words when it is necessary to take action. One of the significant tokens of true believers is that their words and deeds are totally in harmony And the more one distances from such principles, the more such a person distances from faith. These ayahs teach us that, number one, according to the Islamic worldview, the entire universe has a certain kind of perception and everything glorifies the Almighty Creator. Number two, mere claim of faith is not enough and deeds are required to prove conviction. And number three, Allah is aware of all those who think they can deceive Him. Now let us listen to Ayah 4 of the same surah in conclusion of this week's episode.
إِنَّ اللَّهَ يُحِبُّ الَّذِينَ يُقَاتِلُونَ فِي سَبِيلِهِ صَفًّا كَأَنَّهُمْ بُنْيَانٌ مَرْصُوصٌ.
Indeed, Allah loves those who fight in His way in ranks, as if they were a compact structure. The previous ayahs refer to those whose words do not comply with their deeds, while this ayah says that those who keep their words, even in the case of armed jihad, in defense of Islam, and humanitarian values, are endeared by God. The purpose of armed jihad in Islam is not seizure of lands or the resources and wealth of others. It is preserve faith, virtue, and prevention of vice and domination by the enemies. Obviously, differences among Muslims and discord in the ranks embolden the enemies to launch aggression. Therefore, this ayah emphasizes on unity among the faithful by saying that the Almighty loves those who risk their life in His cause like a structure of iron and an edifice of steel. From this ayah we learn that, number one, those who strive sincerely in the cause of Islam and humanitarian values, even in the case of armed struggle or jihad, earn God's endearment. And number two, all ethnic, class, lingual, and sectarian differences should be put aside while confronting the enemy.
The first methodology that the Quran uses is to talk to the emotional side of the human being.
Ya ayyuhal ladhina amanu, O you who believe, ista'inu bis-sabri was-salah.
And we have set forth for mankind in this Quran full of examples.
Minbar, a lecture on Islamic issues.
Islam is a way of life, a complete way. It's a complete way.
Today we listen to the speech of Hujjatul Islam Salim Yusuf Ali.
Now, I want to take you to an incident that is reported to have taken place towards the end of the life of our Prophet, and inshallah that will be an inspiration for the topic that I want to cover this evening. In this hadith, we're told that the Prophet was at the end of his life, he had was in the mosque and he was giving a khutbah. He was giving a speech. He was addressing the people. These are his last hours with the people. He's reminding them of the important messages and of their responsibilities and their duties. And as part of what he says to them, as he's speaking to them, he says, Ya Fatima, i'amali. O Fatima, work, do good deeds. you put in action whatever it is that you have learned from me. فَإِنِّي لَا أَمْلِكُ مِنَ اللَّهِ شَيْئًا. Because I do not own anything from Allah. What is the Prophet trying to say? Why is he mentioning Fatima alayhi salam in the middle of his speech? It seems that the Prophet wants to convey a very important message, which is that the Islamic teachings is one where there is no merit that is gotten by mere claims. True merit and true value comes about by putting into practice what we know. Even if you are the daughter of the Prophet himself. Now the Prophet is the Prophet. He is the one who has the maqam of shafa'a. He is the Habibullah and so many other things. His merits are countless. But when it comes to this point, even his daughter is not exempt from this rule that what matters is the action that you do, what you actually put into practice. It's not about claims. It's not about something that, oh, I knew that. No, it's about what you actually act upon. And brothers and sisters, one of the things we see in the life of Fatima alayhi salam is that she was somebody who, she was already putting this into action. She was already acting upon it. And the Prophet is saying this to her as a lesson for us. And she herself had the same message for her followers. That if you love me, and if you call yourselves my Shia, then your responsibility is to put into action what you know. And so my topic is this concept of practically putting into practice what we know. Inshallah, over the course of the 3 nights, I want to look at some of the principles and the guidelines we have in the teachings in the, of the, from the Quran and the Ahlul Bayt regarding this topic. Please recite salawat ala Muhammad. We're told that one time in the hadith that Nabi Isa alayhi salam, it's after all, it's a time, you know, getting close to what is commonly commemorated as his birthday. Right? Nabi Isa alayhi salam, they say that one day he was walking and he comes across a stone. And the stone has something written on it. It says, Qallibni, turn me over. Now Nabi Isa alayhi salam, you know, he had these types of experiences. He had these types of visions and these types of tests and different things that came his way. Maybe as some ordinary believer like myself, you know, inshallah, if I'm counted as a believer, I don't experience these things. But I have access to these teachings and it's as if I can experience them and I can learn from the experiences that these awliya of Allah had. So he comes across this stone and says, Qallibni, turn me over. So he turns over this stone. Now, what is it, this message that is on the other side of the stone that's so important that it came to us and it's been reported in our books of hadith that Jesus alayhi salam is seeing? On the other side of the stone, it says this. It says, he who does not act according to what he knows will not be blessed in his search for what he does not know. And what he knows will come back against him. Right? This one message which has so much importance. These days, you know, we're always searching for what is that key to success. We're trying to understand what can we do. Well, here it is. Two things. First of all, know what you need to know. And second of all, put into practice what you know. If you don't do that, this is warning us, this hadith and many others, it's warning us that you will not be successful in gaining that knowledge that you really need to know. Meaning what? Meaning there are some things that you are destined to be taught in your life, but the only way of getting access to that knowledge is to climb the ladder through putting into action what you already know. And then you'll see these realities, you'll see these truths. But if you don't, then you're not going to be blessed in that search. You're going to be left in the dark. You won't have access to that wisdom and that knowledge that you were supposed to get access to. And not only that, that which you already do know is going to come back to haunt you. It's not going to be a benefit for you. The Quran speaks about this. It uses this poignant example of an animal, a donkey that's carrying books. That donkey is not just a donkey, it's a human being who has no more value than, let's say, maybe the donkey has more value because the donkey that's carrying books is actually doing its job. But the human being who has that knowledge but is not putting it into practice is not even doing their job. And then the Quran speaks about the other side of it as well. Somebody who has another example too, and somebody who has knowledge but doesn't act upon it. The example of Bal'am Ba'ura, that descendant of one of the prophets, he should have known better. He was given knowledge. They say he had access to Ismul Azam. But when people came to him and they said that Nabi Musa is coming to our land, he's asking us to surrender, we're coming to you to protect us, he decides to take a stance against the prophet of the time. And he wants to use that knowledge he has to curse Nabi Musa. And as he's riding his donkey, the donkey refuses to go on. Until he whips, according to some of the hadith, he whips that donkey and the donkey dies, and that becomes his demise. And what does Allah say? Allah says in the Quran regarding this man, he says that وَلَوْ شِئْنَا لَرَفَعْنَاهُ بِهَا. Allah wanted to this knowledge to be a means for him to climb that ladder, for him to gain, for him to grow. But instead, he didn't use it. He didn't put it into practice the way it should have. It became a source of regret for him. He fell hard because of that. And then the Quran gives us an example of those who practice, but they don't have that knowledge they need to know. They lack that awareness. Who are these people? We see that the followers of Nabi Musa alayhi salam, that they had seen miracle after miracle. Nabi Musa had delivered them from the Fir'aun. And as they have just crossed that incredible trial and the river has closed back down and drowned the Pharaoh and his followers, what happens? They see these idol worshippers, and what do? They say to Nabi Musa alayhi salam, they say, قَالُوا يَا مُوسَىٰ اِجْعَلْ لَنَا إِلَٰهًا كَمَا لَهُمْ آلِهَةٌ. Oh Musa, we see these people, they're worshipping idols. That looks good to us. You know, that is something that we want. Can you make us something like that so we can worship it as well? And Nabi Musa alayhi salam responds, he says that, إِنَّكُمْ قَوْمٌ تَجْهَلُونَ. You are people who are indeed in jahl. You're stooped in your ignorance and your foolishness. Here you are, what kind of worship is this that you're doing, that the slightest thing can come up, the slightest trial, and you can go and jump for it? Where is your tawheed? Where is your understanding of the presence of Allah? Why are you so short-sighted? Why can't you see past this culture that you've been growing up in? They don't have that knowledge. They lack that knowledge.
You're listening to Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. This program entitled Minbar. Our email address is englishradio@irib.ir.
Rahi Karimun Adim Alimun Halim Hakimun Matim. شكور ودود قيوم رؤوف صبور مجيد اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد يا مؤمن
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. English Radio. Thank you.
in the limelight.
In the United States, Democrat Raphael Warnock has won the Georgia Senate runoff race on Tuesday, 6th of December, securing his first full term and delivering a 51st seat to bolster the Democratic Party's majority in the chamber. We take a look at the world media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. Website of Forbes magazine tells us more. Democratic Senator Raphael Warnock won re-election on Tuesday, 6th of December, defeating Trump-endorsed Republican challenger Herschel Walker in a tight runoff race that will give Democrats a 51-seat Senate majority for the next 2 years. The latest GOP defeat in a midterm election cycle marked by worse-than-expected Republican Senate results. Raphael Warnock sought a full 6-year term as senator after the Atlanta pastor won a special Senate election in early 2021, while Herschel Walker, a Heisman-winning former football player, challenged Warnock with former President Donald Trump's backing. The candidates headed off to a runoff race after Warnock led Walker 49.4% to 48.5% in the November general election, with both candidates falling short of the 50% needed to win outright. Warnock appeared to have an advantage in polls headed into Tuesday, and more than 1.8 million Georgians cast their ballots early during the runoff cycle, a good sign for Raphael Warnock as early voters tend to lean Democrat. Herschel Walker, meanwhile, was dogged by a series of gaffes in his final days on the campaign trail. The race was viewed as pivotal in Democrats' quest to expand their current 50-seat Senate majority. Raphael Warnock's victory means the Senate will be split 51-49 between the two parties, meaning Democrats will no longer need to rely on Vice President Kamala Harris's tie-breaking vote and will have a slightly easier route to passing bills. However, Republicans want control of the House of Representatives, making major legislation unlikely for the next 2 years. Republicans have underperformed expectations in this year's midterm elections, despite predictions that inflation, economic fears, and President Joe Biden's low approval rating would buoy the party's candidates. Senate forecasts shifted from favoring Democrats to slightly favoring Republicans in the run-up to 8th of November. But Senate Democrats held their majority after eking out wins in several major toss-up races last month, beating GOP candidates in states like Pennsylvania, Arizona, and Nevada. The House will flip from Democratic to Republican control next year, but the GOP's majority in the lower chamber is smaller than expected. Some Republicans have blamed Donald Trump for the party's performance in the midterm elections, citing losses by several of his hand-picked candidates. The Wall Street Journal has also covered the same story and tells us more. Incumbent Democratic Senator Raphael Warnock won re-election in a Georgia runoff contest on Tuesday, 6th of December, defeating GOP challenger Herschel Walker, who had been backed by former President Donald Trump. The Associated Press called the race for Mr. Warnock on Tuesday night, with 96% of the vote counted. Raphael Warnock had 50.8% to 49.2% for Herschel Walker. The contest is closely watched by both parties. Tuesday's result will offer more clues to Georgia's political direction after a series of hard-fought contests for governor, for senator, and president in recent election cycles. After a hard-fought campaign, or should I say campaigns, it is my honour to utter the four most powerful words ever spoken in a democracy. The people have spoken, Raphael Warnock said to a cheering crowd. Herschel Walker conceded the race in brief remarks to his supporters, urging people to continue to vote in elections and support elected officials. He didn't mention Raphael Warnock by name. There are no excuses in life, and I'm not going to make any now, because we put up one heck of a fight, he said. Raphael Warnock's victory means that Democrats will control the Senate 51-49, starting in January, slightly increasing their hold on the chamber they have controlled since early 2021, when Mr. Warnock was first elected along with his Georgia Democratic colleague, Senator John Ossoff. The win means Democrats will have control of the Senate committees outright and will no longer have to adhere to a power-sharing agreement with the Republicans. Mr. Warnock was the first black person ever elected to the U.S. Senate from Georgia. His Republican opponent, Herschel Walker, is also black. Democrat John Fetterman's victory over Republican Mehmet Oz in Pennsylvania in November flipped a GOP seat and gave Democrats control of the chamber, with at least 50-50 partisan split, thanks to the tie-breaking vote of Vice President Kamala Harris. Raphael Warnock's win, however, gives the Democratic leadership a bit of breathing room and more power. Under the current power-sharing arrangement, Democrats have been prevented from issuing subpoenas without GOP support. Now, committee chairmen will be able to issue subpoenas and provide a counterbalance to a GOP-led House, which plans aggressive investigations of President Joe Biden, his family, and the administration. Senate committees are currently split evenly, making the process slower for moving Joe Biden's nominees out of committees and onto the chamber floor. Raphael Warnock's victory gives Democrats a narrow margin on each panel. Democrats will also have slightly more flexibility on passing legislation. In the last 2 years, lawmakers maneuvered partisan bills through the evenly divided Senate, but passing legislation required all Democrats to agree if Republicans were united in opposition. That gave leverage to centrist senators Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema, who forced the party to make major changes and cuts to its tax, healthcare, and climate law, originally dubbed Build Back Better. One more seat, however, gives each individual senator less leverage over the agenda. Raphael Warnock's win comes after 4 weeks of intense campaigning in the runoff, which was required by Georgia law after neither candidate won more than 50% of the vote on 8th of November. The British newspaper The Guardian has also covered the same story. The runoff was just the latest in a series of very close races in Georgia, reflecting the state's relatively new status as a toss-up after decades of being considered safely Republican. Nearly 2 million Georgians cast ballots in the runoff before Election Day, and those early voters appeared to significantly favour Raphael Warnock. Republicans were counting on a strong Election Day turnout, but Herschel Walker's support on Tuesday was not enough to get him across the line. Dozens of polling locations, particularly in the Atlanta area, reported hours-long lines during early voting, after a 2021 state law condensed the timeline for a runoff election. The number of early ballots cast was down nearly 40% compared to the January 2021 Senate runoff, in which Raphael Warnock won his seat. Voting rights activists blamed that decreased turnout under new election policies. Georgia election officials countered that single-day early voting turnout set new records, rejecting claims of voter suppression. Herschel Walker's defeat will likely intensify questions over Donald Trump's standing in the Republican Party. Overall, Trump's endorsed candidates fared poorly in the election season, prompting questions from some of the former president critics over whether he has pushed the Republican Party to an unpopular extreme. Herschel Walker's failure is particularly worrisome for Donald Trump's standing, given the Republicans swept other top statewide races in Georgia. Two of those candidates, the incumbent Governor Brian Kemp and sitting Secretary of the State Brad Raffensperger, attracted Donald Trump's ire for pushing back against his efforts to overturn Biden's 2020 victory. Before the result was called, the former Republican Congressman Will Hurd said on Twitter, "If Herschel Walker loses tonight, it will be the sixth time in a row a Democrat has beat Trump or a Trump-endorsed statewide candidate in Georgia."
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1930 to 2030 UTC on the following frequencies. 49 meters, 6,040 kilohertz for Europe, and 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and Iran Sat or Bat 5, and via the Internet. Our Internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم
السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود غده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
Current world order will be replaced by a new order where US is isolated, Asia powerful, resistance front expanded. This is the part of a speech delivered by the leader of the Islamic Revolution during a meeting with students on Wednesday, November 2nd, 2022. This meeting was held on the occasion of National Students' Day and National Day of Fighting Against Global Arrogance, which are commemorated on the 13th of Aban, 4th of November. The thing that is actually more important than all of the aforementioned advantages is the logic of our government and civilization, which is the Islamic Republic. We have combined a republic with something that is Islamic. We have combined the people's presence and their votes and opinions with the divine knowledge. Combining these two things is not an easy task, but we have been able to do it with God's grace. It is not flawless. I have never claimed that we don't have flaws in these areas. No, we do have flaws, but our words our logic, it is a new type of logic in the world. So that was about those issues. My last word to you, my dear young people. You see that whatever you do, whatever we do, whatever we all do, our words and our actions, they all send signals to those outside the country. We need to be careful with the messages we are sending. These messages are not necessarily in words. Sometimes the way you even sit can send a message.
دنیای اسلام یک نسخه امروز دارد و اون اتحاد.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
Sometimes your gatherings in a certain place can convey a message. Sometimes the things you chant can send a message. Be mindful of the message that you are sending out to the world. I believe that the most important thing that must be relayed to the enemy front by the Iranian nation and the Iranian youth is the Iranian nation's power and power of resistance. The Iranian nation, the youth of Iran, must use their actions, movements, slogans, and their work to let the world know, which of course the enemy will also understand, that the Iranian nation has the power to resist. It is determined to stand up to coercion. Indeed, this is the duty of the people. The officials have great responsibilities.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope.
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.